91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today's program is a visit by a private investigator known as the South Florida Pet Detective. That may sound a bit lighthearted, but for many people, the theft or loss of their pet is a grave and often tragic event. Our guest is Jamie Katz. Good afternoon, Bonnie Berman here. Pets are often grabbed because they're of a prized breed. Sometimes specialized working dogs are seized. Of course, highly trained forensic animals are extremely valuable. Pet ransoms aren't unheard of. Rewards are often on the table. Jamie Katz works in urban areas as well as small Florida towns. Some pets just go missing, but experts may get them home. We'll visit with the South Florida pet detective, Jamie Katz, in minutes. First, the news. And welcome back to Tuesday's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman, Joseph Cooper on vacation. For many, beloved animal companions are more than just pets. For some, they're akin to children. For others, with service animals, they're a lifeline. For others still, they're an essential part of the family. At times, our pets can innocently go missing, but sometimes there are also more sinister forces at play. Highly valued pets can be stolen or kidnapped and even ransomed. Compensatory rewards are often promised. And after exhausting all imaginable resources to no avail, where can one turn? Enter Jamie Katz, a licensed private investigator, the pet detective. Not Ace Ventura, but Jamie Katz. She joins us in our studios, and welcome to you. It's a pleasure to have you with us, Jamie.
Thank you. Hello.
I'm really grateful and fascinated by your work and how you came to it or how it came to you, so we'll get to all that. But do you think that some of us are just born animal lovers? I mean,
I do.
How did your passion begin? When did it begin?
I've loved animals since I was a little kid. Everything revolved around animals. Anything I did, it was, you know, playing with this animal or finding this animal or just helping animals in general. This is everything to me.
Did you have pets as a child?
I did. I had a dog named Rex. He was a Great Dane. He lived right before his 13th birthday. We had him all those years.
That's a long time for a Great Dane.
He was awesome. We had three cats, DJ, JJ, and Blackjack.
And then something happened with Blackjack.
Blackjack went missing when I was, I believe, between 4 and 6. And I remember riding my pink, white, huffy bike around the town and going to people's front doors and knocking on their doors and saying, "Have you seen my cat, Blackjack?"
Did you ever find her?
No, I didn't find Blackjack.
Do you think that informed your choices? Do you think it had something to do with it?
I'm not sure, but
hard to say.
I look back and I'm like, oh, I was a investigator way back in the day.
So tell us about your first work with animals. How old were you?
Let's see. I was, I want to say 12, 13 years old, and I volunteered at the police department did a rabies clinic once a year in Sharon, in the town I grew up in.
Where's that?
In Massachusetts, in Sharon, Massachusetts. And I volunteered and just filled out the forms for the people coming in for their dogs and cats for the rabies vaccinations. So I did that a couple years. And then I was working, walking dogs. I walked my neighbor's dog for, I think, $1 a day. It was a German Shepherd. Her name was Princess. And I walked her for $1 a day.
And then from there, the next work you did was as a vet tech in Baltimore. You moved to Baltimore?
Yeah, at first I was a kennel person when I was 14, 15. And then I went to a vet tech. And
That's Fletch.
That's Fletcher.
That's Fletcher. We'll talk about him later. Go ahead. It's not us crying.
No, that's not. That's Fletcher. So I was a vet tech, and then I decided that rescue on the streets, actually, you know, getting these animals off the streets and helping them was where I needed to be.
So that's when you first became aware of strays?
That was when as soon as I moved to Baltimore, there was just cats, dogs, just everywhere all over the streets, and I had never seen this before. I wasn't used to this, and I just started taking them all in.
You started taking them all in. So when you were a vet tech, we'll talk more about the rescuing. When you were a vet tech, why did you not become a vet?
Oh, I couldn't pass chemistry 107.
Oh, that's a good reason.
Actually, my best friend took the class with me for the third time just to help me pass it, and I passed it with a D. So
you said this isn't for you.
No.
Okay, so talk about the stray work that you did, because I did some of it myself, and I often found myself in harm's way. Did you ever find yourself there?
Oh, yeah. I worked, I had a route that I traveled, that I drove every night in the west side of Baltimore. It was by myself, and same route every night. I would put food stations out, and then I knew every cat that was on every alley.
Right.
Like hundreds of cats every night, hundreds and hundreds. And I would leave the food stations, and they would all come running to me when my car came up. They'd come running out, and never to me, though. And if they were sick, injured, I would trap them. If they had kittens, I would get the kittens first and then wait a week before I go back to get the mother cat to make sure right. There's no kittens left behind. It was scary, though. There was, you know, people every day, drug dealers telling me to get out of their alleys. I would have cops pull me over and say, okay, Jamie, tonight you need to go home. I had that happen one time, one or twice. There was somebody who was a murder in one of the alleys or one of the areas I was in. He pulled me over and he told me to go home. So I went home for the night.
So that was that.
That was that.
And how many years did you do that?
The route, about 2.5, 3 years I did that.
And when did investigation come in, other than losing blackjack when you were 4 years old? When did investigation come into this picture? How did it come in?
So when I first saw Animal Humane Officers on TV, that show, they had animal cops. And I said, oh, my God, that's what I want to do. And so it said that you had to have a 2-year degree in criminal justice to be able to do that. So I said, well, that's what I'm going to do. So I went back to school when I was 25, I want to say 25, 26. Okay. And I got my criminal justice degree.
And did you ever investigate missing people?
I did. I started to do that. At first, I was a PI for people.
Really?
Yeah. I can find anybody.
They weren't animals.
No, they weren't.
Your heart wasn't in it, right?
Well, investigations, I love to do that, but I wanted to put animals and investigations together. That was my dream. That was my dream.
Okay, so how did you do that? How did you put it together that, you know, recovering missing, lost, or stolen animals?
Okay, so my neighbor in 2014, May 2014, her cat went missing, her 14-year-old cat named Honey. And when she went missing, I went on Craigslist, and I was looking to see if somebody had found her, and I found an ad on Craigslist, and it said that we're private investigators, and we find lost cats and dogs, and we use tracking dogs. And I'll tell you, my first thought was, this is so stupid. And then my second thought was, let me call them. So I contacted them.
When you say your first thought was, this is so stupid, what do you mean? You thought
having tracking dogs. How can a dog find an animal?
Okay.
And I didn't understand that.
Okay.
And so my second thought was, let me find out. And I contacted them, and they said they were on their way. I waited for 3 days. They never showed up. We found Honey on the third day. Honey's owner found her on the third day under the house next door. She was actually being held hostage by another feral cat in the neighborhood.
Oh, my.
We had to get brooms. We had to
I never
go
thought.
Under. Oh, no, this cat was holding her hostage.
I never thought of cats holding cats hostages.
100%.
Okay.
I mean, it was hissing at us. So we had to take a broom, and we had to get the cat out from underneath the house. Then my friend, Honey's owner, actually crawled underneath the house and then into the actual concrete of this house to get her cat. And we got Honey back, and now I had two new things I had to do. I had to find out, now, are tracking dogs real? Because this company didn't show up to help. And if they're real, then this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Let me just digress for a minute, because you mentioned Craigslist. And social media has probably enhanced so much of the work you're doing. But I'm also thinking of the negative side of Craigslist, where people who steal animals sell them on Craigslist. So it actually has a double edge, and it made me think about it when I was, you know, preparing for the show today.
Mm-hmm. I warn all my clients once we start working together. I say, look, you know, there's people that are going to call you, and they're going to tell you they have your dog. They're going to tell you they're going to lie to you. They're going to say things to get to you. You have to be able to get past it quickly so that you can focus back on what's important, which is finding your animal. I always tell them they can call me and I'll walk them through anything, but it is, like you said, I mean, it's, you know, either way, it's going to happen, and it does happen.
It does happen.
It does happen.
And people also do sell them. I mean, a thief can easily go on Craigslist.
Yeah.
I wonder if, have you ever approached them, or to, I mean, do they verify how somebody gets the animal that they're selling on Craigslist?
I think once you get to the point where you found your dog and that's your dog, and I don't focus on how they got them, anything else. I just want to get them back. Once we get them back, you know, it's, you can focus on whatever you want, but it's so, it's a tough road to actually get it back, when, even if you found your dog, you know? So it's definitely difficult.
So then there's PI Jamie Katz. That's your firm now, Private Investigator Jamie Katz. How did you get, what led to that? When did that start?
Right after my friend, we found my friend's cat.
Okay.
This is forever. I mean, I was already a PI at that time, and I was an intern, and that was it. That was forever. This is what it was going to be, and I researched to find companies that I could, if this was real, to see if this is something I could do forever, and I found a company, and I went and I worked with them, and I started my own agency.
So you're based in South Florida, but your work takes you a lot of places. Is that right?
Yes.
Tell me some of the places.
I've been to Pennsylvania. I've been to Massachusetts, Alabama, Georgia.
And how do people find you, or how do you find them? How does that happen?
Let's see. Michael Jordan's family found me from somebody in California. And his daughter's dog went missing. And I got a message in January from Michael Jordan's daughter's friend. And it said, hey, can Jasmine call you tomorrow morning? Sure.
Yeah, sure.
She can call. Sure. So
and?
People, and yeah, no, we, they hired me, and actually the original, the pet sitter who lost their animal actually had put their own flyers up, and they had gotten the phone call once they had already hired me, and then I just walked them through the legality part of it, you know, getting the police to show up wherever it was, and I just walked her through it. And
you got it back?
Yeah, we got Mila back.
Wow. What was his name?
Mila.
We're speaking with Jamie Katz. She's a licensed private investigator, an animal lover and advocate. Her licensed private investigation agency is PI Jamie Katz. It's based in South Florida. It's the only private investigation agency in Florida that specializes full-time in recruiting lost, missing, and stolen pets with their families. And she uses Fletcher and Gable, and we'll get to those. But we need to take a short break. If you want to join in the conversation, if perhaps you've lost an animal and gone through something like this, perhaps you've used Jamie or not, our number 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Questions at radio@wlrn.org as well. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman resuming our conversation with Jamie Katz. She is a licensed private investigator and animal lover and advocate. Her agency is PI Jamie Katz. Again, our number 1-800-743-9576. Perhaps you have lost an animal and wondering what you did to find it. What helped you? What didn't? 1-800-743-9576, radio@wlrn.org. Jamie, what's your success rate? We're going to go through the process, but first I'd like to know that.
I'm right at about a 59 to 60% right now.
Which is pretty good.
It's pretty good. 16% of animals that go missing get back home. 16%. So right now, 59 to 60. That's great.
You're saying on average overall?
Yeah, in general, 16% of the missing animals in the country get back home. 16.
Do you attribute that more to your process or your passion or a combination?
Both. Definitely both.
How important is it that somebody contact you as early as possible?
Oh, the quicker the better. The quicker to get the awareness out there, then.
And how do you determine, like, which aids to use for which cases?
The first thing I do is I profile the case to find out if we have a happy, friendly dog or we have a dog that's not going to go to anybody. So that's the profile is the biggest part of it.
And explain that. Go into detail. Explain that more.
Well, I go through different questions to profile to find out, you know, is this dog going to let somebody walk up to them or are they going to walk up to somebody? Because if they're not, then you never want to have people, you don't want to give a reason for people to chase that animal. So it's either going to be the happy, friendly dog that's going to have a large reward amount, and they're going to have a large reward amount because they're going to jump right in your car. The ones that aren't going to run up to you or are going to let you come up to them, you don't want to put an actual reward amount because you don't want anybody to envision or imagine what they can buy with that money, because if they do, they're going to chase your dog. So
what happens if a dog is, a scare dog and will bite if anyone comes up to it?
That's the shy, timid dog. You don't want to put that reward amount on him.
Right. Okay, so let's a recent case of yours that received a lot of notoriety, and we may be speaking to her later, was Choco, the missing Staffordshire pit bull?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. But since we may be talking, and again, that's Natalie Lopez, mm-hmm. and so we may be talking to her later. But let's go through, and in that case, ransom was demanded, correct? Let's go through a case, though. So you get a case. Mm-hmm. How often is ransom demanded in the ones you've worked on? Not
often.
No?
No.
Okay. So take us through a case. So I called you because my cat is missing.
Okay. So you're going to call me. Do you have any animals?
Of course.
Okay. Do you have a dog or cat?
I have a cat.
Okay. What's your cat's name?
Jimmy.
We'll call him Jimmy.
Okay.
Okay. How old is Jimmy?
Jimmy's 16.
Okay. And is Jimmy neutered?
Yes.
Okay. And so I'm going to ask you for a description of what Jimmy looks like.
Okay.
And then the next step is going to be, did Jimmy have on a collar?
Okay. No.
Okay. Is Jimmy microchipped?
No.
Okay. Is this the first time Jimmy's gone missing?
Yes.
Okay. And is Jimmy an indoor-only cat, or is he outdoor as well?
Indoor only.
Okay. Even when you go outside, does he go with you?
No.
Okay. And has he ever gone missing?
I just thought of another question. Do you ask if it has claws?
I don't. Usually they tell me if they do or they don't.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. So what was the next question?
Is Jimmy declawed?
No.
Okay. And has Jimmy gone missing before?
Never.
Has he ever wandered off and gotten outside at all?
Never.
Okay.
Never been out, except when she was rescued.
Okay. And then is Jimmy a shy, timid cat, or is he a friendly cat?
Not friendly.
Not friendly. So if I walked in, he's probably going to go hide.
He'll go hide.
Okay. So
she'll go hide.
The beginning of the profile is, now we know that Jimmy's going to be a cat that's actually not going to let me walk up to him, and I'm probably not even going to see him. So then what we would start with you would be the awareness campaign, which is the sign campaign, because you need to gain information. The only way to gain information is to gain awareness. So that's the first thing I do, and I make it impossible by mapping out for my clients where their sign goes. All they got to do is put them up exactly the way that I map it out, and it's going to be impossible for anybody to come in or out of that certain mile radius without having to see a sign and without knowing who Jimmy is.
Just to digress for a second, I was reading of this article about these code violations of signs. Mm-hmm. What's that about?
That's an issue. It's a problem. I'm actually trying to work...
Are these certain municipalities that have them, or is it a county thing?
It's illegal everywhere to put signs up. It's just illegal. They'll say it's advertising, so I took my name, I took my logo, I took everything off the signs, and then they say that they cause accidents, car accidents. So it really just comes down to they don't want to take the signs down, they don't want them up, it litters their city. But this is the only way. This is the number one way to get your animal back. And if you want to get your animal back, you have to be able to see a sign and drive in 60 miles an hour. It's not a flyer. It's a sign, a big sign.
So what happens in these areas where it's a violation? What happens? They rip them down? Or?
They take them down, and sometimes they'll hold them for them, and sometimes they throw them away. They do contact them, and they'll say they're going to find them. They're going to, every sign that you have up, but they haven't found anybody yet. I hope they don't, but I'm sure they would. But I don't want them to. I want them to let them understand that, this is the only way they're going to get the information that they need. And, hopefully we can. I'm trying to work with different counties right now as we speak to try to see if there's something that we can change sign-wise.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that. Mm-hmm. Who do you speak to?
I actually have a friend who, I'm not going to say who she is, but I have a friend who's pretty high up there
I'm
working it out.
Right.
She's step by step
ask.
With.
Okay, so you put the signs up, the awareness, what you're calling the awareness campaign.
The awareness campaign.
Looking for Jimmy. Okay, mm-hmm. What else?
So once we have all the signs up, then, you're going to put the signs up yourself, the client, and I'm with you every step of the way. When your first sighting comes in, you call me and you say, Jamie, somebody just saw my cat at 5th and 6th Street. I'm going to tell you what to do next. So we don't know what step two is until we get that first phone call, though. So I walk them through this each step of the way and make sense of what's going on.
What's the most important aid? Is it this awareness thing, the signs?
The signs. Signs are the most important. There's nothing else that's more important.
What about advertising? No.
Signs are, is advertising for them.
And how do you know, maybe I was abusing Jimmy and that's why she ran away.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know that that's not the case sometimes? That's never happened.
No.
That's good.
Yeah. It's not usually if somebody's going to pay money and really want their animal back.
Right.
You know, even if, you know, I've had cases where somebody said, their animal went to the bathroom in the house and they did scold them and then they ran out the door and that is how they went missing. But they did call me to hire me and they did. We got that dog back. So it does, you know.
Okay. So let's talk about when you use Fletcher and Gable. First of all, tell us about Fletcher and Gable.
Oh, Fletcher. Fletcher and Gable they're awesome. They're not miracles. They are amazing, but they're not miracles. They don't walk up to your dog or cat and just grab them and take them home. Fletcher and Gable I use to move cases forward. So if, you know.
There he is. Yeah. Oh, okay. We can take a short break right now, and then we'll get back to the scent tracking dogs, Fletcher and Gable. Short break on today's Topical Currents. We'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman speaking with P.I. Jamie Katz. She's a licensed private investigator that specializes full-time in reuniting lost, missing, and stolen pets with their families. And part of the time, or some of the times, we're going to find out when she uses scent-specific tracking dogs. They're named Fletcher and Gable. We have Fletcher with us here, who's busy eating a toy or a bone or something. So first of all, who trained them? Okay. Secondly, does it require special training? I mean, dogs have an incredible sense of smell, right? What goes into it?
We train on a weekly basis here in Florida. So we start, to bring the dogs in the case, I don't think it's always the first thing to do is to start with dogs. I think that they're amazing and they're awesome, but I think it's the sign campaign that gets these animals home. Dogs are something that you can bring in to move a case forward. That's how I use them, unless the animal just went missing.
Okay, and in that case, because I'm wondering, sometimes you get a blanket or an object, mm-hmm. Scent.
We use 100% scent article, so it could be an old collar. It could be hair in between the couch cushions that you gathered up. It could be a thunder jacket, just something that's 100% only their scent.
And how long does a scent stay on, like, an inanimate object, like a collar or...
I think I've used a collar that was probably 6 or 7 years old that hadn't been worn in 6 or 7 years, that was just in a drawer.
And it still worked?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Tell us about, we're going to also talk to them later. Well, let's take a call first. Let's just take a moment here to take a call from Lisa in Riverview, Florida. Lisa, welcome. You're on Topical Currents.
Hi, how are you? Hey, Lisa. Hey, Jamie. Thanks for letting me call in. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Go ahead. So are you a client now?
Yes, I am. And today is the 76th day of my little dog going missing. And, Jamie's been a big help. When your dog, does all of a sudden disappear and everything, you don't know what to do. You know, your mind is just everywhere, and by talking to her and everything, she calms you down. And, I would have probably put put signs in the wrong places or whatever. And she, I know you guys have been talking, so I don't exactly know what you've said, but, you know, she maps out exactly where, and I would have been like, oh, I never thought to put a sign there, you know. And so, and then each time, you know, someone calls and says they, you know, have seen, you know, my dog, and she checks it out, and she's just been a huge help.
Do you still have hope? I mean, is 76 days a long time, Jamie?
It's a long time, but I never think that you should lose hope.
Right. And what about you, Lisa? So what happened to your dog?
I had both my dogs at the pet sitter's house, and so we dropped them off, and then about 4 or 5 hours later, the pet sitter called me and said one of them was missing, and you know, we've just been going from there. I think he's probably still in the neighborhood, and even though there's signs everywhere, and you know, the reward, it's, you know, $3,000 reward, and you know, some, I could, if I have to, I mean, I'll sell my car, I'll give him my wedding ring, I don't care, you know, but evidently the people don't want to give him back for some reason, and I don't think he's deceased or anything. I really think that people probably have him.
Hey, Lisa, what neighborhood do you live in that Presley's missing in? Can you go ahead and give him a description of what Presley looks like and what kind of dog he is?
Yeah, he's a 9-pound Pomeranian. He's mostly black and white and has a little beige. This was in Boyette Creek subdivision in Riverview, Florida. And Riverview's just outside of Tampa.
And what was the date he went missing?
Sorry about that. March 31st.
Mm. So all you Riverview, Florida people out there, keep an eye out if anybody knows anything about a black and white Pomeranian, 8 pounds.
And his name is?
Presley.
Presley.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, we wish you good luck, and we're glad that you have Jamie on the case.
Yeah, me too. Because yeah, okay. I've had some crank callers, you know, and she'll just call me right down, you know, cause get really angry, and she's just really great. She's awesome.
Thanks, Lisa.
I don't know what I would do without her.
Okay, well, I wish you really good luck finding Presley.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, all okay. The good. Okay.
Bye, Lisa.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
And let's talk to, this is the one I was going to bring up earlier. We have Natalie on the phone, and Natalie's case received a lot of notoriety when her missing pit bull, when her pit bull, Choco, went missing. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Very good, and yourself?
Good. So tell us what happened.
Wow, it was definitely a crazy ordeal. What had happened was on April 10th, I lost my dog. It began as a lost dog case and kind of escalated into a bit of a stolen dog / ransom, holding ransom, you know, my dog for ransom sort of case. So it was interesting. I was lucky to have Jamie to help me throughout the way.
Okay, and so when did you contact Jamie? How long after you lost Choco?
I believe I contacted her probably the second day or the third day that I had lost him. It might have been the second day because she's really well known. Yeah, she's really well known online in a lot of Facebook groups who, you know, like with a lot of animal advocates within. And I was referred to the Facebook group by somebody who had just randomly contacted me over Craigslist, because Craigslist was where, you know, being somebody who's not familiar with the steps on how to go about, you know, a situation like this, I just started on Craigslist. So from there, someone told me to go on Facebook, and then immediately I was just getting a million hits to contact Jamie, and then that's when I told Jamie I needed to contact her, and she called me right back.
And what happened from there, Jamie? So she calls you.
Yeah, so she called me, and I profiled her case, and I said, let's start with the signs. Let's get the awareness campaign up, and let's find out who has information on Choco.
And how long did it take for ransom to be demanded?
2 days, I think. Right, Natalie?
For ransom to be demanded?
Yeah.
Was it two days?
Yeah, it was on April 14th, I believe, was our first message.
And how did you get that message?
Well, it was through something that, you know, again, I discovered through Jamie, who has really walked me through how to handle all these situations. But it was a burner phone, so somebody had messaged us from a throwaway phone just basically demanding money, wanting to remain anonymous. And it's difficult because you can barely track down these people when they have these burner phones, which they can be purchased with a prepaid credit card. And then these credit cards can be purchased with cash. No names need to be given when you get these phones. So you're basically left in limbo trying to, you know, get answers from somebody who refuses to give you their name. So it was a little crazy.
And then?
And then he asked for $750 through Western Union, and it was difficult. It was a difficult decision to, you know, we got a picture of Choco. And I always tell my clients, I said, look, people are going to call you and say they have your dog. I said, until you get a picture, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And we finally got a picture. And so he then told us where the dog was picked up originally, the exact intersection. And I wanted to bring my dogs out to see if we could kind of trust this person of what he was saying. We did. We brought the dogs out. And my dogs alerted a vehicle pickup, you know, right where he said the dog was picked up. Both of them confirmed it. And it took us about another day and a half, and we did decide to send the 750 Western Union, and that's when he disconnected his phone.
After you sent the 750?
After. Yeah,
after. As soon as we did it.
And without giving you Choco?
Choco.
Without giving us Choco. But the thing is that people always wonder why we decided to send him 750, and the real reason, besides the fact that it's just paper and obviously our animal's love is priceless,
right.
But the real reason as well is without having sent that $750, there would have been no charge initiated. There would have been no ability for the police to help us at all.
They wouldn't have been able to, you know?
Yeah, they wouldn't have been able to.
It has to be a crime.
I see.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we went ahead and did that, took our chances, kind of had some faith in this individual, hoped that he wasn't as heartless as he really was. But either way, because of that, you know, from there, we were able to get the help from the police that we needed, any, you know, extra backup that we could have along the way, which definitely helped.
Natalie, did Choco have a chip?
He did not have a chip. And, you know, I'm still kind of iffy about the chips because when you put a chip on your dog, somebody still has to bring him to the shelter or bring him to somewhere where his chip can be scanned. And, for example, in my case, my dog wasn't ever going to be turned in. I mean, it was a ransom sort of situation, you know, where these people breed pit bulls, fight pit bulls, you know, what it may. They're not going to turn in my dog and scan the chip and find the owner.
What the chip, though...
Is it a good?
It is a good thing though, because in the end, you know, this didn't happen. It didn't end like this. Mm-hmm. But say, you know, Choco was found, passed away somewhere, deceased. Then they could have scanned, and we would have known it was him. Or if it was a situation where these people said, "Oh no, Choco! I bought Choco. He's my dog, and I have a microchip, and you can scan him." You know, well, if he did have a microchip, we could have scanned him, and it would have came up per info.
Okay.
So in that kind of situation,
do you recommend?
I do. I do recommend all animals be microchipped,
and at least always have ID on a collar.
Yeah, definitely a collar. I mean, get a collar, get it embroidered. You don't have to put their name on it. I have an embroidered collar on all my dogs, and it's black, and the color is green, the green writing, and it just says reward with my cell phone number, because if anybody finds my dogs, only thing I want them to think is money. Money. Call me. I'll give you money.
Is that the biggest incentive to get them back?
Yeah, for a friendly, happy dog,
right.
Definitely.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, Natalie, well, we're really happy you got Choco back, and thanks so much for calling.
Thanks so much. Without Jamie, I couldn't have done it.
Okay, that's great.
Bye. Thank you so much, guys. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Let's talk to John, which Natalie just brought up about using dogs for fighting. John, welcome. You're on Topical Currents.
Hi. I wanted to ask if any of your investigations for your guests have ever unfortunately turned out to be where your discovery was that a dog was stolen and used as what's called beat the dog for dog fighting rings and that kind of thing. And if you have any suggestions that you'd pass on to the listeners about what they should do to prevent that. Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you, John. Thanks very much.
I have not dealt with a situation where a dog has been used as a bait dog, or I have not found out that a case that I had was used as a bait dog. So I haven't come into that yet.
What's the most, I notice many more dogs disappear than cats. I mean, it's overwhelming on your, you know, it looks like you've been contacted, at least in the case of many more dogs than cats. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I think I'm better at finding cats.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
There you go.
I just say that as my last name, so I kind of think it's, you know. No, okay. I find them both. I think I get the same amount of actual calls for dogs and cats. For some reason, I do get more dog cases, though, that actually turn into cases.
I see.
Yeah.
Are cats more often just they've wandered where dogs can more often be stolen?
More or less dogs are picked up. You know, they get out the door, and then once they're out the door, they get picked up. So they're not technically stolen, but it's more of a finder's keeper type. You know, I found the dog and I'm keeping them. That happens with dogs. With cats, yeah, usually they're not picked up. You know, 9 out of 10 cats are not your friendly, happy cat. 9 out of 10 are going to be the shy cat that's not going to let you come up to them.
Exactly.
Those cats are usually roaming.
Roseanne writes, if you, to ask your opinion on tracking or location devices such as this one. And what she has here is something called, where is it? A Jibby. Jibby pet locator with a GPS.
I haven't heard of Jibby yet, but I've heard of Pet Tag, TAGG. I've heard good things. They have a 10-day battery on a GPS collar, and the actual map goes to your cell phone or your email.
You know, I was thinking there must be so much ecstasy and triumph when you're successful, you know, finding an animal. But what about the heartbreak, or what are your feelings when you don't?
It's, I mean, I don't give up, though.
Okay.
So in my mind, it's not, oh, we didn't find the dog or the cat, so we're done, and I'm sad. I don't get like that because I don't give up. As long as my owner, my client's still in it, I'm still in it. I always search for cases I have open, always. Forgot the original question.
No, I was talking about the triumph when you succeed.
Oh, it's amazing. It's wonderful. It's the greatest feeling in the world that I know that I helped these people reunite with their missing family. It's amazing, and there's nothing better.
We're speaking with private investigator Jamie Katz, PI Jamie Katz. She rescues or reunites lost, missing, or stolen pets with their families. And we have Beth on the phone. Beth, we're going to take a short break, so stay right there. And when we come back, we'll take your call on Topical Currents. Again, our number 1-800-743-9576.
That's awesome.
Yes! Yes!
Well, this is from the comedy series, of course, 8 Ventura. Let's bring Alan one here.
Pet detective.
Did that say never even held a gun?
Yes.
Oh, well, I've never held a gun.
Even though that was a comedy, evidently mm-hmm. it was a launching pad for a very serious subject and industry, right?
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. And you said, actually, we had, I forgot the intern's name who came in and said he wanted to meet you because it was his favorite film growing up. Okay. We do want to talk to Beth in Miami. Welcome, Beth.
Hello.
Hi, Beth. You're on Topical Currents.
Hey, hi. I had a comment and a question. The comment was just about chips. I found chips at my dog's elbow. They do tend to migrate, and it's not a bad idea to have your vet scan for a chip when you're in there, because I've had to re-chip at least one dog. They do travel, so you want to be sure that chip is where someone can read it.
Yeah, I've heard that before, that they do travel a little bit. They can move.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your question?
Okay, so basically I'm curious, because whenever I find a dog, and I find a lot of them, there's a part of me that thinks take it to the pound because someone, that's where people go to look for it. And another part of me that, you know, I'll usually scour a neighborhood locally before I'll do anything. And it's very rare I don't find a pet's owner in an afternoon. But I was curious what you thought about the centrality of the pound as a place to take a dog so that its owner might be able to look for it.
I'm so happy you're asking that, Beth. I wanted to get to that. Jamie?
I think it's a great idea to first advertise on Craigslist, Facebook. There's, if you're locally here, the Lost Dog Broward page is awesome.
And why not go to the pound?
Oh, no,
first?
No, I didn't say that. Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, definitely didn't say that. I think the pound is great, too, because, okay. I mean, there are situations where I wouldn't be able to take an animal into my house because I have animals.
Exactly.
So if you can't take an animal into your house, you don't want to put them in danger. So sometimes you do have to do what you have to do. And if you, you know, go on to Craigslist, let people know, hey, look, I just found this dog. I couldn't keep it at my house, but I did take it to animal control, or I took it to the Miami shelter, wherever you took it. Just make a post, let people know what you did, so it's easier to find that dog. Make flyers if you can, if possible, and just put them up.
I've actually had a dog that ran off, and we looked for that dog at the pound for a week, probably two, and the dog we assumed was gone, and 4 months later, someone dumped it over the gate at the pound with its tags, and they called me and said, your tag's out of date.
Oh, wow.
I guess they got tired of the dog and decided to put it somewhere where it might find its owner. It had tags and stuff like that. But it was a big surprise after 4 months, and we grieved the dog.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, no, that's great. It's a great surprise.
That's a huge stroke of luck.
Weren't you lucky?
Yes.
Okay, Beth. Well, thanks so much
for calling.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What is the longest it's ever taken you to find an animal, a missing animal?
I think Mancha, the miniature dachshund in Miami, Kendall, Miami area.
How long was it?
72 days, I believe.
So two and a half months.
Yeah, 2.5 months.
And what were you going to say about Ace Ventura and Jim Carrey?
Oh, I was going to invite Jim Carrey to come and track with me on a case. I would love if he would love to, you know, to see how we really work these cases and come on out and let's work together.
All right. Well,
there it is.
I think it's a great idea. Let's talk to Stephanie. Now, Stephanie did not lose her dog or her cat. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Good.
So tell us about Benjamin.
Okay, Benjamin is a ferret. He's 2 years old, kind of fat, super friendly. He is awesome.
And what happened?
So basically, on May 31st, Memorial Day, my dad left the door open. I know he's listening now, so good job, Daddy. He's kidding. He left the door open. Benjamin escaped, and we were looking all over for him. And there was no sign of Ben for about 2 days. We spent maybe 10 hours Monday looking, putting up signs, talking to people, but there was no nothing. So then on Tuesday, I think it was June 1st or May 31st, I'm not sure, but that Tuesday, one of my Facebook friends told me, hey, you should contact this person called Jamie Katz. I'm like, okay. So I went online, I looked her up. I called her. I go, hey, Jamie, Benjamin, he recently escaped. I know he's not, you know, a dog or a cat, but is there anything you can do to help me find him? And she was like, well, I've never done a ferret before, but we can try. So then I was like, okay, can't lose hope. So Jamie came over with her two dogs. Both dogs tracked Ben. Jamie, how many times was it? Maybe three or four that we went around with him?
Yeah, we went around three or four times, and then we finally got a trail out, actually, and Fletcher followed a trail out all the way down the street into a parking garage and then kept going and to the main road, probably about a fourth mile out. And
So somebody actually did steal Benjamin.
Well, he wasn't stolen. He was finder's keeper. Somebody found him,
okay.
And picked him up.
Because Dad left the door open.
Yeah,
okay.
Dad left the door open, and... you know,
so Ben got out then. I guess, well, now we know that somebody picked him up. Tuesday night, Jamie sent me a picture. She goes, oh, look, I think this is Ben. Is this him? I go, oh, my God, that is Ben. I know exactly what Benjamin looks like. I go, yes, that's him. I was 100% certain. So we ended up getting in contact with this lady, and she basically told me that her boyfriend had already given Benjamin away to someone going to Georgia.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Mm-hmm. I know. So yeah. I was like, oh, no. I really don't care. Please tell me who has him. I will go to China if I have to, but I just want to get Benjamin
close
back,
to China.
You
know? She almost went to China. Almost. So, yeah, once that happened, you know, there was no information that we could get out of these people. They weren't going to help us. They just were not going to give us any information. So I told her we got to get the sign campaign up because that's how we're going to get the information that we need. So she got the sign campaign, the signs up exactly the way that I mapped out within a half an hour of the signs being up.
Yeah, and you know what, Jamie? I'm so sorry. Me and my dad doubted her signs for what, maybe like 3 or 4 days?
Yep, they wouldn't put signs up for 3 or 4 days.
And as soon as my dad put the signs up, within 30 minutes, I got a phone call. I saw Benjamin in front of apartment 109. So I ran over there, talked to the guy, and it was because of that I have Benjamin now.
Yeah, so we got the actual person who found Benjamin and who he gave him to, and then he actually dealt with that the people who wouldn't talk to us. They worked it out together.
He didn't want to talk to us at all.
Yep. So she just came back from Georgia, I think 2 days ago. They drove 10 hours to Atlanta, and they picked up Benjamin.
Oh, my. You did have to go to Georgia.
Yep. We had to go all the way to Georgia. And when we picked him up, he was really scared. Me and my dad, we were kind of worried at first. But then he started sniffing me, started going crazy, exploring everything. And he's really happy now.
Hey, Stephanie, maybe Benjamin could become a scent-tracking ferret.
Probably.
He knew who you were.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
He was so happy to see me.
Oh, I'm sure. And I can't imagine. And what about you? You must.
Oh, my gosh. I was so happy to see him. I almost started crying.
Well, okay, Stephanie, we're really glad you got Ben back.
Thank you. And I guess maybe this is something to go to everyone. If you lose a pet, don't give up. Pets are, you know, very, very, very... Hello?
No, we're here.
Yeah. So, yeah, my message to everyone is don't lose hope.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Stephanie. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So, Jamie, we just have a couple of minutes, and I'd like you to maybe address what people can do to prevent losing their animal. I mean, it's good that they come to you and learn what to do once they have, but what can we do so that we don't lose our animals?
Make sure that you have, if you put your pets in your backyard, if you let them use the bathroom, make sure that you don't have any holes in your backyard. Make sure that you don't leave your door open, or make sure your friends come in and they know that you have a dog or you have a cat. Do your due diligence. Due diligence, and make sure that there's no way for your animals to get out. And I don't care if you just gave your dog a bath. Make sure you have a collar on them. Put it right back on, because that's the number one thing every day I hear at least three people I deal with. Oh, I just took his collar off because he had a bath.
Right.
I don't take my dog's collars off when they have baths. I don't.
That's a good piece of advice. Don't take the collar off.
I don't take that off. I don't care. It can smell. I don't care. It's staying on.
Is there anything else?
With pet sitters, you know, if you're going to hire a company, make sure they're insured and bonded. Make sure they know what they're doing. Get references, you know, and have them come to your house. I always, if I'm going to have somebody watch my animals, it's going to be at my house. You know, I want them in their environment. I don't want them in a place that they don't know where they are.
Right, and they may try to get back to where they do know.
Yeah.
Is there anything on earth you'd rather be doing, Jamie?
I can't think of anything in the world. This is it. Nothing else.
Well, we wish you all the best with all... You have a lot. How many cases are you working on right now?
Well, my cases don't close until we get the animals back, so unfortunately they do stay open.
There are a lot.
We have, I think we've had about 110 cases since we've opened in September, and I think about 63 to 65 are closed.
That's great. So. Well, ID, most important.
Collar, ID, microchip, fenced backyard, no holes, and make sure your friends know. Don't leave your door open, and, you know, just be careful.
Be careful.
Be careful.
We've been speaking with Jamie Katz. She's a licensed private investigator. Her licensed private investigation agency is PI Jamie Katz. It's based in South Florida. And your email?
My email is jamie@pijamiekatz.com.
Your website?
pijamiekatz.com.
And you have a Facebook page?
Yes, and I have a phone number, 844-411-CATS, K-A-T-Z.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, and I'm really happy for the work you're doing.
Thank you. It's awesome. Glad to be here.
And that wraps up our program today. Hope you enjoyed it. It was produced by Polly Landis. Lead producer Richard Ives was on the phones with technical direction from our online producer, Paul Leary. Free audio archives available at our website, WLRN.org, and links and information at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program, we consider power and its role in our every relationship and interaction. We visit with UC Berkeley professor Dacher Keltner. Bonnie Berman thanking you for being with us and hoping your day is a good one. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.